People in and outside the community of faith were devastated to learn that a pastor in California recently took his own life.
Today on Real Family Talk, pastors discuss the realities of life in the ministry and how they find balance. Join us.
Preaching a series of sermons on anxiety and depression, a 30-year-old pastor, husband, and father of three young boys took his life. "Please pray for me and the boys," his wife recently said on Instagram. "I don't know how I am going to face this. I am completely heartbroken, lost, and empty. Never in a million years would I have imagined this would be the end of his story."
This was a pastor of a non-denominational church, but joining us to talk about this tragedy and what it's like to be a pastor are Sean Paris and Chad Stewart. Welcome, Chad.
And good to see you.
Sean, glad to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
So tell us, what do you feel about this situation? What comes to mind? What grabs you? What's your response?
Well, immediately what comes to mind is it doesn't matter who you are or what field you are in, we all are susceptible to these types of tragedies and these types of crises in life. Mm-hmm. And your position as a pastor or whomever does not protect you from such things.
There's no superhuman.
No.
We're all just flesh and bones.
Exactly.
Sean?
You know, it's also, we have to keep in mind that there is something going on in the brain that is not normal, whether it's a chemical imbalance or just situations that it makes your thinking go sideways. And you can have all the faith in the world, but the devil's going to attack that and manipulate it. And dealing with it is a challenge. And oftentimes, as pastors, do we have the coping skills? We're often giving those coping skills to others, but are we trying to self-medicate and treat ourselves and not able to? And so we end up in a worse shape because we're not seeking the help that we need.
So that's really interesting that you talk about the chemical imbalance and the rewiring of the brain and all of that that's going on. And I totally understand that as a therapist. But I just wonder, and it's not a criticism or a judgment, but your pastors, your job is to give people hope from week to week. What do you think went wrong here? Is it that there's a disconnect between the message and the reality of the message?
Well, I don't want to speak specifically for this individual, but I think that there are a multitude of pastors, if you were to speak with them, that have lost hope in various ways. I would say maybe even Sean and I have had our moments of this crisis, not to maybe the extent of this young man, or at least not in my case. I can't speak for Sean, but I think hope is one of those kind of nebulous things. And again, what Sean said, you know, one of our highest instincts is to survive. You know, you get pinned under a wave in the ocean, you try to fight to the top. You know, you're at the bottom of a pile in a football scrum, and you have to take a deep breath to just know that people are going to get off you eventually. And so it's one of our natural instincts. So something, there has to be a major breakthrough, as you guys know as therapists, that something broke through that they could no longer deal with that. And probably in the process of trying to speak on anxiety, as you guys said, and trying to give hope to others, he ignored the issues,
his own needs
and his own issues that were going on in his heart. And that's not uncommon. Most pastors aren't going to go to this level, but it's not uncommon for pastors to have that issue of ignoring their own health needs in the process.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing you say, Chad, and what I heard Sean say earlier on is, well, one, we're human. Mm-hmm. Two, we're not immune to all of these frailties that humans have. Mm-hmm. And you spoke about the chemical imbalance. The reality is we have no control over chemical imbalance. Mm-hmm. Chemical imbalance many times is a manifestation of some kind of mental illness. Mm-hmm. And if that is so, obviously you have to take care of it. Mm-hmm. You can't just keep going forward. I would say, since I'm also a pastor and I've worked in the pastoral ministry, that the pressures are there and anyone could be pressured.
Yeah.
But how do we pay attention to needs that are beyond our scope to diagnose?
Yeah.
That's why we go to physicians. Mm-hmm. That's why we need to find help from people who have the capacity and the skill to help us where that is concerned. And not think that because we're pastors that, well, we're going to be covered and it's going to be all right because, I'm strong and Jesus is with me. Yeah. Yes, but we have to acknowledge the frailty and address it. Yes. Yeah.
And there's a stigma in Christian culture that if you have to seek a therapist or a counselor, your faith isn't strong enough.
Yeah.
You should be able to push through this.
Yeah.
And if the stigma's there for the layperson, it's even personified upon the pastor. What's wrong with our pastor that he would need a counselor?
Yeah.
That he would need help? I mean, how weak is his faith? And I think that keeps a lot of pastors from seeking the help that they might need.
Yeah, that's so sad because, again, one of the first things I often say to people that we learn in Counseling 101 is that our job is to inspire hope.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no different than your jobs as pastors. So imagine a pastor who is struggling mm-hmm. in his faith, who has lost hope, to go to someone whose job it is to inspire hope.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the remedy for this? What do you do? Do you have anything that you do yourselves? And what would you recommend to pastors who are struggling and they're feeling lonely, they're feeling isolated, they have no one to speak to? What do they do?
I think that, one, you need to surround yourself with things, but I would say even to the larger, you know, because you're going to have members that are watching this, I would say to those individuals, be aware that your pastors may have struggles. He or she may have some sort of crisis,
that they're
going through something. And, you know, I have members all the time come up to me and say to me, oh man, pastor, you seem really tired, you know, or whatever it may be. And that then they move on with their mm-hmm. life, with their day. But if you're recognizing that in your pastor, then I think I would encourage members to take some accountability and to speak into their pastor's life and minister to their pastors as well and recognize, hey, maybe we need to give them some help in this process also. As a pastor goes, I would say, you know, it can get to the place where you don't even realize it yourself because you're just so distraught.
Yeah.
But at some levels, I would think that one of the big things we can do is surround ourselves with people who will speak that truth into our lives.
Yeah. So we're going to continue that and we'll get a response from Sean, Pastor Sean, when we get back. After a break, we'll talk more. Stay with us. Welcome back. After a California pastor took his own life this year, a Florida pastor posted on social media, "In this generation, pastors are expected to be business savvy, Instagram quotable, preaching celebrities, fully accessible, deeply spiritual, not too young, not too old, and if a pastor doesn't quite measure up to someone's expectation at any given moment, they are given a 2 out of 5 star rating on Google." Wow. We have reduced the ministry to star ratings on Google. Let me recommend that you pray for your pastor and support your church faithfully. You'll probably never realize what they walk through privately.
Sean Paris and Chad Stewart are husbands, fathers, and pastors of large community churches, and we've been talking with them, and we'll go back to talking with them. Sean, you were about to say when we went to break about your own experience and reflection on what's happening.
So I grew up in California, and when I was sent to seminary in Michigan, and that first winter came along, seasonal affective disorder set in, and I had never experienced anything like that before.
And many people know that as SAD.
SAD,
the
yes.
acronym. Mm-hmm.
And there were signs up on the campus that had the acronym there, and I would see them, and something inside of me was dying. I could feel it, but I didn't know what it was. Mm. And by the about midway through the second semester, so we're talking February, March, I was really low, to the point where it was affecting my marriage. And to the point where I was beginning to have the suicidal thoughts. And what had started as seasonal affective disorder had now transitioned into full-blown clinical depression. Mm. And if it weren't for my wife coming to me and saying, you either get help or we pack up and move back to California. Yeah. We're done. That woke me up. And I did. I sought help, and it took several months, but at least I was there was a counselor who was giving hope. Yeah. And we got through that. And I'm aware of it now. But my own experience has helped me in helping others, church members that I can spot when they're going through those things. I've helped quite a few. But it was, in my experience, my mind wasn't working right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking clearly and like I normally think.
Right. Yeah. And let's not forget that the mic can only take so much. Mm-hmm. And as pastors, especially people in ministry, we often think that we're superhuman.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about you being at seminary. I mean, I've been there in the middle of winter and the classes and
the cold and the paper notebook,
but just the weight of the classes, mm-hmm. you know, and your pressure to perform and do well, especially if you're sponsored. You don't want to disappoint anyone. You don't want to disappoint yourself. That is pressure. And that pressure added to that environmental pressure, mm-hmm. cold, snow, can do a number on you. So mm-hmm. I think people need to be aware. And this program is about awareness. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it. Let's realize that we need to be mindful of self-care. Mm-hmm. And that if something is going wrong, good for you. You had a wife who was paying attention mm-hmm. and who was insisting that you do something about the situation, that you both do something about it. And if you can't handle it, go back where you came from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there's nothing more important than life.
Yeah. I think that's what's powerful, too, about your story, is the fact that your wife was supportive. Because mm-hmm. in many of these situations, you might have a spouse who says, I'm out of here. I don't know what's going on. Like, you're a different person. And that's what depression does to you. Mm-hmm. It really, like you're saying, like, you didn't know yourself. Like, who's this person?
Yeah.
And these feelings, and your mind is totally altered. And I'm actually convinced, and I get in trouble with my psychology friends and colleagues about saying this, but I am convinced that depression is the devil's tool to really destroy us, because it really makes you focus inward. That's the only thing you can think about. Every day when you wake up, you're just thinking about what an awful person you are. And if we could just channel those feelings outward to Christ, you know, to look at Christ. I know it's not that simple, and we need help, and sometimes you need medication, but that focus of moving it outward. But talking about spouses, how do you guys balance marriage and family and the pastorate?
Well, balance is going to be different for everybody. So, you know, I know there's some cookie cutter books out there that talk about this is what balance is, but everybody's balance is different.
And I'm glad you said that.
Well, yeah. I think it's important because I think that you have those people that are around you. We deal with people in ministry that their churches probably aren't quite like our churches.
Yeah.
And I mean, I pastor one of the larger churches, the North America Division, and I have a multi-staff church, and some of the things that I have to deal with are not going to be what other pastors have to deal with. And if someone looked at me from 5 years ago to now or 10 years ago to now, they'd say, well, you're out of balance. But my wife would tell you that we're more in balance now than we've ever been.
Yeah.
There's other things going on, but we've taken intentional steps in other areas. So we have more meetings. Well, then we are taking intentional steps on the weekends to be together as a family. You know, we're being more intentional about family vacations. There's things that we do to fill in those gaps where we've lost some balance and we've gained it in other places.
Okay, how about you, Sean?
You know, I had a friend that told me one time that the idea of balance is a joke.
Yes.
And the more I experience life, the more I think he's right. Mm-hmm. And what he was trying to say was, there are going to be times when your family is going to need you more than the church. And there are going to be times when the church is going to need you more than your family. And you've got to give when those things come up. You know, right now our church is in the midst of an evangelistic series. And so we're there every night. But on the backside of that, I make sure that I plan specific time with my family. And, you know, we're still doing follow-up for the evangelism and so forth, but I plan time with my family. And then we also know that we'll have a vacation planned about a month and a half to 2 months out after an intense time like that. So that there, it may not be perfect balance, but they know that, you know, I'm taking some time off and feeding myself, but I'm also taking time with them and spending time with them.
Just here, before we go to break, how do you manage the expectations of your role with your church members especially? You know, you both pastor relatively large congregations. What do you do? How do you handle that?
I think it was harder when I was younger. When I was younger and there was more of maybe a worry of insecurity, I guess, in some way.
It's so funny to hear you guys say that because you both look really young. So I'm sure people are saying younger, like how much younger?
When I was in my 20s, I'm 40 now, but I was in my 20s, it was a bit, I think a bit more challenging, but I think you manage the expectations by being secure in who you are and who God called you to be. Mm-hmm. And you have to live within that realm. And you know, I think of, I'm not quoting exactly, but I think Ellen White once said, do what's right because it's right and leave the consequences with God. And I've tried to live by that principle, and that's helped me in, mm-hmm. in it, managing expectations. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get you when we come back from break. We're talking about what it's like to be a pastor and how they find balance. If you'd like to share your thoughts on this topic, please visit our Facebook page as listed on your screen. Welcome back. Just like everyone else, the life of a pastor is filled with joys and challenges. Lifeway research revealed that the number of pastors diagnosed with clinical depression is double the national average. So back to what we're talking about. You know, this is tough. So what do you guys do to relax? You were supposed to say something, Sean, from the last segment.
Well, it was just on the topic of how do we bring, you know, the balance and so forth. I actually sat down one day and wrote a list of creative ways to say no.
Nice.
And
that's good.
And we need to be able to know when it's appropriate, what things we can't say no to and what things mm-hmm. we really can and not feel guilty about it.
Like fixing someone's plumbing.
Literally have had someone ask me to help them hang drywall.
Or changing their tires. Yeah, you know, one of the things that we used to say, and we still actually say it when we speak to pastors, is that they need to train their congregations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you could train your congregation to think that you're on call 24/7, and someone might be offended by this, but I say to people, are you an emergency room medicine physician?
Yeah, no.
You know, if someone gets sick at 2 a.m. in the morning, really, it's just like if you call your doctor at 2 a.m., mm-hmm. what does their answer machine say? If this is an emergency,
hang
up and dial 911. Okay, yeah. So we're not going to be that callous, right? Mm-hmm. But you're right. How do we train our congregations to respect our boundaries, right? That we can't be all things to all people. Yes, in some small churches, right? You mm-hmm. might have to do a little bit more, but maybe we need to train the elders mm-hmm. more. Do you have any other ideas for pastors?
Yeah, pass it off to me now.
I say no. I
gave my piece. I say no.
You say no. Okay. Yeah,
I think you know. I think again, it varies. It varies by the pastor. Yeah. And I think in some of the smaller churches, again, it can be harder. And I know a lot of smaller church pastors are watching, and it can be harder because There is kind of that expectation that you're at every birthday party. Oh, you went to that member's birthday party, so you have to be at that member's birthday party. Oh, you have to do that, or you have to... So some of those go away within the larger context, and the expectations change, you know.
And we only have 24 hours a day.
Yeah, we only have 24 hours in a day, you know, the thing is if you don't take the time to write a good sermon, then in the larger churches, that's really what you're going to hear about. Like, oh, man, you didn't.
Well, you know what, even in smaller churches. Yeah. So when we first got married, he was pastoring a very small church, what, 100 members?
120, and I was youth pastor at the largest
church. Pastor, but the small church was the one that we spent a lot of time at. And he actually, this is back in the 80s, guys, we had one of those, you know, physical answer machines. Mm-hmm. And he put an answer machine in the office, and
members
were upset. Like, they brought it to the board, like, who's this pastor? Who's this young guy? Who does he think he is? You know, and basically, he told his board, this was a small church. You know, we have elders.
That church was 200 and something. Yeah. That was a bigger church.
Yeah, but either way.
They didn't like the answer machine.
Yeah, they didn't like the answer machine.
They didn't like the answer machine. They didn't like the answer machine.
But anyway.
And it's personified today in the age of cell phones, where the pastor is instantly reachable and should respond within moments. If they don't pick up, you know, I get a phone call, and if I can't answer the phone, it's immediately followed by a text message.
Yeah.
That there's an expectation that I immediately respond.
Yeah.
And I tell my members, and I've said this over and over again, it is respectable for me to respond within 24 hours.
Yes. Yes.
You do not demand instant responses. Yeah. If I get back to you in 24 hours, that's good. Yeah. And when they throw it back at me, I said, go ask your mom and your dad what they did back in their day.
Yeah.
Because that is, you know, life. It's not life and death. I'm a pastor.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to sew your arm back on. So
what do you do for exercise, for fun, for relaxation? What do you do?
Well, I'm growing a beard because I'm about to run a marathon. And every time I run a marathon, I grow a beard. So I run a lot. So I did 10 miles yesterday, and that's what I do. I run a lot.
So you run and you change your look. I guess it's part of the mental health process.
Right? Yeah, so.
what do you do, Sean?
I do, I love to be out on the water canoeing. Okay. And I do a lot of woodworking. And I have a full wood shop in my basement. I use that to clear my mind as I'm writing sermons. I go down there and spend an hour or two before I finish a sermon off. And I've started incorporating bringing my daughters into the woodworking process. Right. And just a couple summers ago, we built a kayak together.
Oh,
and now
nice.
they're out on the water with me in their own homemade kayak.
Oh, that's really cool. There was something that you guys mentioned, and both of you have said it. And again, I think other pastors listening might say, well, these guys, you know, they have these large churches. They don't do anything. They're just sitting around, which we know is totally not true. But I want people to take this away, the fact that you both mentioned you're intentional. Yeah. About making time for yourselves, for your prayer time, your prayer life, preparing for your sermons, for yourselves, your health, and your families, your marriage, your children. It's not going to happen if you don't set aside that time. And one of the things we share with families, and we do this especially for pastors, is helping them to understand that we have to put first things first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, family,
work.
Then work.
Yeah.
If these two are out of balance, this one's not going to work.
That's right.
And one of the things that we often say is that if you want a healthy pastor, you want your pastor to be productive, then give him time with his devotional time and with his family.
Yes. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense. I think that we put a lot on our members too, and I would just say that one of the things that leads us out of balance also is ego. And I would just say part of the reason why members see us as being all things or being superhuman, as you said, Willie, is because we've kind of established that. And
you guys come in with your capes.
To publicly talk about your weak sides and talk about your flat sides, I think is important to talk about that. And then I think, too, one of the things that helps me is my kids love the church because we involve them in quite a bit. So if you involve your kids, like my kids love to go early with me to church. And it's such a pain for me. But I take them because I want them to be like, oh, this is cool. I get to go with dad to church early. And I'm able to just kind of walk around and go up in the sound booth and do whatever else, you know.
When it's all empty.
So, yeah, when it's all empty, I go back alley, the back rooms. And so, you know, involve your kids, involve your spouse. Yeah. You know, make church more of a blessing than separate from the other things.
Yeah.
How have you gotten through tough times? Can you think about a time in your ministry where things were difficult? What did you do? How did your spiritual life help you?
I've gone to counseling several times, two or three different times in my ministry, my 15 years of ministry.
That's wonderful.
For extended amounts of time. So that's something I've done.
I would add to that, I have a solid network of mentors.
So accountability.
And folks that I know I can reach out to on the phone, and they're there for me, and we can talk, and there won't be any judgment, and they're just there, one, to listen and to give some sound counsel. These are folks that I trust. Mm. And other their colleagues, ones that have mentored me in the past, and those that I've found to be just very trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing and your openness to share with us and share with our audience. Thanks for watching today. And we're so grateful for Pastors Sean and Chad for participating in this important discussion. We invite you to share your thoughts about today's discussion with us on Facebook.
That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll talk more about strengthening families and inspiring hope.